The Education, Finance, and Economic Competitiveness Division will come to order. The clerk will note the roll as people come in. Representative Slawick, do you have a motion for adoption of the division report?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 1056 from the Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee, our division report, be adopted by your committee.
Thank you. Representative Slavik moves the adoption of the division report on House File 1056, and that bill will be before us. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. The chair will move that House File 1056, first engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Finance Committee. And I will renew that motion after all the discussion today. Representative Slawick, welcome to the committee. You are here with this excellent report of a lot of work that your committee did, and we're anxious to hear it in a general manner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have two amendments, Madam Chair. Would you like to take those now, or to get the bill in the shape so that it's ready for discussion?
Okay. Before that, Ms. Flower, Ms. McCormick has just a little technical amendment. Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, there's just one technical amendment that we did not pick up at the last stop. On page 13, line 16, the line reads, completed between July 1, 2007 and August 1, 2007. The oral amendment would be to state, completed between July 1, 2007 and August 31st, 2007. This is page 13, line 16. So instead of the last date being August 1, 2007, the correct date is supposed to be August 31, 2007.
That is a teeny technical amendment, Mr. McCormick. All in favor of the McCormick amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is adopted. Hey, Representative Slawick.
Would you like them to do the amendments or proceed with the bill? Okay, yes, A50.
Amendment A50 is in your packet, and Amendment A52 is in your packet. And those are the two authors' amendments. Representative Slawick, A50.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A50. Members, you will see that the biggest change in this amendment is taking out the St. Paul Circulators and Professional Development and adding it as a rider. The funding has been added to the after-school programs. All of this is accomplished in lines 1.6 and 1.8 on the amendment of A50. Otherwise, the other pieces are very technical and really just matching the spreadsheet with the language.
Is there any discussion on Amendment A50 as explained? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A50 amendment is adopted. Representative Slawick moves adoption of A52.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For A52, it's appropriations changes. The major changes to appropriations are starting at the co-pays in 2008. Those are the child care co-pays. We took $3.1 million from the basic sliding fee that we're using in TANF and put that into the co-pays. We also need to make some funding adjustments in the governor's service agreements as all this, the CCAP funding interacts. And if you change one piece, then you have to change it all. So we're just making funding changes needed to balance the bill fiscally. So it really is a technical amendment that's going to leave the bill more balanced.
Is there any questions? Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The changes in the previous amendment and this amendment, are they already tracked in our fiscal spreadsheet, or?
Yes. I believe they are. Yes. Ms. Adrian says they are.
All in favor of the amendment A52, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. A52. Representative Slawik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll talk about the bill in general. And first of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and I want to thank the members of your committee that sat on our committee. I know there's several of them. Representative Ward is here, Representative Garofalo, Representative Eastland, Representative Wardlow. Did I miss anybody? I want to make sure that this committee knows how hard they have worked on that committee to make this bill come together. I also want to thank the staff, our fiscal agents, I want to say, analysts. Emily Adrians has worked very hard, several late nights, as well as committee administrators back here, Sarah Benscoper and Tricia Kiefer, who is the committee LA. So I want to thank everybody for their hard work on this. The 2000 House Early Childhood Funding Proposal will do three things. It invests $484 million over the next 2 years, which is a $65 million increase over the base, and a $34.9 million above the governor's original recommendation. The one-time funding in this bill totals $37.9 million over the biennium, meaning that about 57.6% of the $65.86 million over the base is one-time, and most of the spending comes from the general fund, and $25 million of this bill comes from TANF. Members, way back when Representative Murphy, I think, got us together maybe the first time, you asked us what our goals were for our committee. And we talked about really, when you're talking about our youngest citizens and our littlest kids, and it's really about getting them ready for school. And the four things we, at that time, talked about focusing on, and I'll go back and talk about what we did, was one, we wanted to look at closing the achievement gap, so that's been a big priority of our committee. Two, we wanted to increase quality in child care and preschool settings. Three, expanding citizen engagement. And four, encouraging innovation. So our committee worked very hard, and I think we've done some of all of that. Here comes one of our other committee members, Representative Kranz, also was on the Early Childhood Committee. And thanks for all
you
your
remembered
work.
My name.
Yes. The first part about closing the achievement gap, I think that this bill makes smart investments to close the achievement gap, and it really delivers the biggest bang for the buck. These words might sound familiar to some of the, I know K-12 and some of the other committees are using similar words, but really when you think about it at the early childhood level, if you can get kids really to not have the achievement gap right off the bat, you're going to save those special education costs, those juvenile justice costs, and get kids ready for school right off the bat. In a targeted, cost-effective manner, this bill restores funding to Head Start School Readiness and ECFE, which are proven programs that help kids get ready for kindergarten. We had House File 5, Representative Bly, Representative Kranz, Representative Fritz, all had parts of that and did that restoration for about $10 million. So we're back to the 2003 levels for all three of those programs. This bill, to close the achievement gap, also funds two scholarship programs. We have two different versions, one which targets low-income families in rural areas. Right now, the MELF, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation, is doing scholarship programs in St. Paul, but there were no rural ones. So we added two rural pilot programs. And then we also fund the Governor's Scholarship Program, which is structured to go through the Department of Education and also help low-income families, and that's funded at $2.5 million. So for a total, we have $5 million going to scholarships and looking at those models. Also, another smart investment we make to close the achievement gap is funding basic sliding fee child care for an additional $8.35 million to decrease the waiting list. So, you know, Madam Chair and members, you know, there's those kids and those families that can't even get child care because they're on the waiting list. They need to, trying to get off welfare, trying to get in their jobs, trying to get out there and have support for their kids, and then they're put on a waiting list. So this will invest about $8 million to decrease those waiting lists. Our second objective, which was increasing quality in child care and preschool settings, our biggest initiative is around professional development. And I think it's Representative Peterson, of course she's here, she's the vice chair of the committee, had some great bills on this. We know that whether it's grandma taking care of kids or a sophisticated child care center or wherever kids are, it's really about the adults that are with them. You know, whether they're watching TV or whether they're learning their ABCs or the colors or exactly what's happening. So this bill provides a variety of professional development opportunities, provides for child care providers through the child care services grants, and also through the governor's services agreements. They're significant investments. One other great thing about increasing sort of quality in child care and keeping it going is a bill we have that was brought to us by Senator Roebling that caps licensing fees to $50. Right now, remember the governor had his big fia-palooza. What could we pronounce that? But he wanted a lot of fees. Way back in 2003 and 4, I think it was. And everything went up. Well, they could actually charge child care providers up to $150 to continue to be licensed. And for a lot of providers, that was a lot of money out of their pockets that wasn't going to help those families and get more toys or do things that could help them. So what this bill does, it caps licensing fees to $50, and it also picks up the background checks. So we're going to have more providers out there, more providers of being able to afford these costs and not have to go through the stumbling blocks that sometimes hold them back. As far as citizen engagement, this bill funds $5.35 million in after-school grants, which keeps kids off the streets and productive during their out-of-school time. Even though it's the early childhood bill, we have after-school funding in this bill. And we think that that's something really important. Way back when this study started, we did have after-school grants, I think in 97 and 98, which were unallotted at a certain point by the governor, and then we didn't have any more funding for after-school grants. With the one-time funds we have in this bill, we're able to fund about $10 million of after-school grants and keep our kids moving in a good direction.
Excuse me, Representative Slavik, and that's for kids of all ages?
Yes, that's for kids of all ages, preschool through 12. Another program, that would be more along the life learning trajectory, Madam Chair. Also, this bill funds ABE. Now, I think Representative Winkler is not on this committee. That was Representative Winkler's bill, and it funds it for about $82 million, $3.6 million over the base, which is about a 4.6 increase. Our committee went out to an ABE site. We visited the Hub Center. We learned about our recent immigrants that are coming to our area and that need help getting their ABEs and getting their GEDs, and that really, when you look at closing the achievement gap, this could go in that area too, as well as citizen engagement. And then the last thing I'll talk a little bit about is that encouraging innovation. You know, one of the things that we struggle with in our committee is that the early childhood system is very much fragmented and segmented and run through two different departments, the Department of Education and the Department of Health and Human Services. And we were looking for initiatives and innovations that could help break down some of those barriers and bring things back together again. Representative Peterson had an initiative called the Community Hubs, and she can jump in here or talk more about this as we go through the bill. We're doing two-year hub programs with four sites in rural, urban, and suburban areas. The hubs will be managed by school districts, and they're intended to create some structures to address the current fragmented delivery of early childhood programs. So when you take sort of those silos of the Department of Ed does this, or Head Start's here, or ECFE is here, and then the schools are here, in particular, this takes the early childhood system and blends it in with the K-12 system. So it's a good transition for kids, and hopefully we'll get them moving in the right direction. The other innovation that we have that addresses the fragmented system is a school readiness advisory board that is in this bill. I've had this bill for many, many years, and it's the first time it's made it this far in the process, so I'm pleased that it's here. It creates a 13-member advisory board to work with the governor and the legislature to develop a coordinated, efficient, and cost-effective system for delivering early childhood programs that focus on early care and education, health care, and family support. This board would do things like recommending a multi-year plan for coordinating and integrating early childhood programs, improving service delivery, avoiding duplication and fragmentation to enhance public and private investment. It will also bring forward an annual report. There are many other states, Madam Chair and members, that are passing us up in terms of early childhood from a policy standpoint, from an investment standpoint. What a lot of these states have done is they put these boards in places. This one's actually modeled off what Governor Napolitano does in Arizona. And so they found that it works when you have a board that you can have all the players talking to each other and working towards the same goal, which is really getting more kids ready for school. So with that, Madam Chair, we think we have a good bill for the resources that are available this year. We want to thank you for the target that we do have and for your leadership. And we hope that this committee will pass this out today.
Okay. Thank you so much. Just one question, Representative Slawick, have you sent your letter to the Majority Leader about the advisory board?
Yes, we have.
Good. So everything's in order and it doesn't have to go to the other committee then. Any questions about the presentation? Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawick, how does your bill, I don't serve on early childhood, how does your bill compare to the bills we've had the last few years? I know that we hear various things about this is a wonderful bill or this isn't, and I would like to put it in perspective. Could you give me that perspective?
Yes, Representative Greiling, I'd love to give you some perspective. Although, I have to tell you, it's kind of a interesting thing to try to do. What I talk about when people ask me, it's almost hard to describe because we had a press conference and we talked about the bill, and the headline in the Pioneer Press said, you know, early childhood a priority in the House, and the Star Tribune said early childhood left off the bus. So it kind of depends on where you're sitting from. We've struggled in this legislature, and we've struggled in this House because we know there's been budget deficits, and we haven't had a lot of money. And all we've done, and you've been here, I've been here right along with you, you've been here longer than me, is we've cut a lot of things. And there were very serious cuts to the early childhood system since 2003. Particularly, the child care system was cut by over $100 million. It's really hard to get that kind of funding back. Really hard to talk to families about why we did things like that when, you know, the role of government in the early childhood system is really a workforce development issue. It's really about helping families get to work. It's really about getting kids off on the right foot. So some of what I view as our fundamental responsibilities, we didn't do a very good job at. So it's significant if you look at it, it's mostly we've cut the last several years. There was, at the very end of the last session, you'll remember that Senator Hottinger chaired the Early Childhood Committee in the Senate, and he was leaving. And so I think there was a little more funding put in at the very end last year, so we did get an increase. But comparatively, these are significant, you know, restoration, both ECFE, Head Start, and school readiness. Now, some people say, well, you know, great to have a restoration, but what would have happened if you had done inflationary increases since 2003? Would have been a lot higher, right? Child care, we're doing significant investments. We have a lot of one-time money that's going into child care. Again, what would have happened if we hadn't cut $100 million? What better things could we have been doing? So when you ask if it's a good bill or if it's, you know, where, what the differences are, it's a significant investment compared to the amount we've had before, compared to your target, Chair Garling. It's not much, but that's because you have bigger things and you have the K-12 system. And as someone said, you know, your funding, I think Madam Chair said this, that you're funding 12 grades plus kindergarten, and we're funding the first 5 years of a child's life. So, I mean, comparatively, we don't, you know, probably merit maybe as much. It's hard to talk about that. But so I think it's a good investment. You know, I hope that in the future this legislature can do more.
Representative Polsky.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawick, this is either to you or to staff. I'm looking at the bill brief and I see the governor's budget and I see the House DFL budget. Could you give me the number for the Senate bill? How do we compare to the Senate?
There is no comparison, right.
And Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, if there is no comparison, why wouldn't there be?
Representative Blowski, well, one of the things with, and Madam Chair, One of the difficult things is there's no committee over there. So there isn't a, when people ask what are they doing, they don't have a committee to put this all together. So this is half of this bill sits over with Chair Berglund and Human Services and the child care funding. Half of the bill is sitting over with in Leroy Stumpf's area. So it's very hard to do a comparison.
Madam Chair.
And
Representative Slaw, these accounts exist somewhere.
Yes.
So given these accounts exist in the Senate,
yes.
There's no aggregate total that we've made comparing up. I mean, your bill has to match up somewhere at some point. If there's a conference committee, it's going to be in pieces or?
Excuse me for interrupting.
Madam Chair.
It will match up in finance. Finance will make the match.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, I would just like a round number.
I could, and I can get that.
Are we higher or lower?
Madam Chair, Representative Klausky, Claire Roebling, Senator, who's co-chair of the Early Childhood Caucus, came to our meeting today and said something like it was pitiful and it was lower. Is that sufficient, or would you like a
No, Madam Chair, we're sorry, I have a follow-up question.
Representative Klausky.
And this might be to you, Madam Chair. Assuming that the governor goes through with his promise to veto our tax bill because of the fourth tier and the fact that $500 million is sitting in there for property tax relief, can you tell me what contingency we've made to hold to this target once that veto takes place?
Representative Klausky, we haven't got a contingency for early childhood or for K-12 or for higher ed.
Madam Chair, thank you for your honesty. I thought that was the answer.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'd like to give a perspective, too, to Representative Brandon's question about the bill. I'd like you to take your, if you can take your spreadsheets out, I'd like to just show you some information on the spreadsheets that I think is important that we understand about the bill. And first of all, the early childhood bill is in two articles. Article 1 is the education component. Article 2 is the daycare and DHS component. Article 1 is roughly the first page of the spreadsheet. Article 2 is the second and third page. If you look on page 2, first of all, of the spreadsheet, and go down to about line 67 and about line 77, there's been much comment about the cuts that were made to child care in the past, and there were real cuts, but I'd like you to look at the first two columns. And if you look at the forecast for 06, 07, which is the current biennium, and you look at the forecast for 08, 09, which is the biennium that we're going into, what you see in line 67 is an increase of about $63-64 million. If you go down to line 77 on the basic sliding fee, what you see is an increase of almost $40 million. So basically what's happening in the base coming into this session, we're seeing about a $100 million increase to our child care system. Now, they were cut in the past. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't cut and there wasn't need. But we just need to understand that at the starting point for the child care component of this bill is $100 million more than we had last year. And then I'd like to go back to the first page of the spreadsheet. And if you look on line 20, one of the things that I noticed in the last year or so before this session, over the election cycle, there was much discussion. The early childhood advocates have been very, very active, making that a very, very important issue. And most candidates, both sides of the aisle, were saying we wanted to put more resources into school readiness, into kindergarten readiness, and to really making sure that we were giving kids the jumpstart they needed educationally to succeed. And that was my understanding of the Early Childhood Caucus, and that was my understanding of where we were going to try to go this session. But if you take a look at what's happened this session, if you look under line 20, and if you look under the, if you go over about four rows there to the governor's recs, 08, 09, that would be the governor's proposal for this session. He was proposing to spend $138 million on our early childhood programs. If you go over to the House rec, which is about six or seven columns over to the right, you'll see the bill puts in $119 million. Okay, we're $20 million below the governor on this page for early childhood stuff. Now, the big telling factor is to go over to the 2010-11 number, where that's basically what we will be coming in for the next 2 years from now. That will be the base coming in for the next budget cycle. And if you look on the governor's recs for fiscal year 10-11, what we see is $168 million. That's going to be the base for early childhood programs coming into the next session, if we would 2 years from now, next budget cycle, if we would have followed the governor's lead. Okay, instead what we're going to end up with is, if you go to the far right, third column from the right, you see the House rec for fiscal year 10 and fiscal year 11 is $113 million. We're talking about $55 million less for a base 2 years from now in early childhood programs. I'd say what we did in this bill may have done some interesting things, but it has really slowed down the progress for getting early childhood programs on the educational side of this equation in place and getting funding in place that we can use in the future. So I think that is where I see the biggest weakness in this bill. We've taken an opportunity to advance the early learning and the school readiness component, the closing the achievement gap component, and we basically put most of it into child care. And I think that's a big mistake, and that's where I find my biggest objection with the bill.
Thank you, Representative Eastland. Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, and I guess I'm addressing
the committee.
The committee.
Thank you.
I think we're forgetting that in child care we have a lot of school readiness. Many of our children are in child care centers and in child care settings, whether they're licensed, non-licensed, family, friend, and neighbors, through the age of four until they go to school. So to say that only these children, only these situations that are above the line in ECFE and school readiness, et cetera, are the only programs where our children get the learning, I think is leading us a little bit astray. Now, whether we have to be dividing, you know, the Health and Human Services Division and the Education Division is something else. Personally, I think that would be together. Maybe when we had children, families, and learning, that was the right direction, because then we could really focus on those programs in a different way. As it is, we also, if you notice below the line, had to put money into adult basic education and some other areas that were not even within the purview of early childhood. But if you also notice in the Star Tribune, one of the areas that they criticized us for was the fact initially we didn't have enough money in adult basic education, and those are the folks that we are preparing for our workforce right now and whose families are impacted by their ability to learn English and to be able to work and to be able to be part of this society. So I think we're just simplifying it just a little bit, Representative Eastland. Although I would agree with you, I would like to have more money in all of those early childhood programs. So we're not far off in terms of our wants and desires. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Why do I have the feeling that this conversation has taken place before? Representative Slawick.
Just a brief note. The bill passed out of the committee, 12 ayes, one nay.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, for a moment, mention the study that was released yesterday, or perhaps the day before, but I learned about it yesterday, that children in quality preschool programs have an accelerated vocabulary. But children in child care, by the time they're in sixth grade, are behavior problems or have more behavior problems. And I hope that we're going to think about those two distinctive differences here as we check through this spreadsheet and start reviewing this bill more carefully as to where we have placed our, as most of us like to say, investment. Because remember, an investment has return. And the return we want is that not sixth graders who are behavior problems. Absolutely, we want preschool children who are speaking English, primarily in, you know, my concern is that they're speaking English, which is our our country's language well and articulating their ideas as they enter school. So just some things to think about because we want to look at the word quality. Quality is so important, and if we have some kind of reform that we need to make within the child care system, then we need to take a look at that in regard to what is happening to our children.
Thank you. Representative Erickson, could you, after a while, give me a note of what that study was? Because I haven't had much time for studies or newspaper articles this week. Representative Heigerkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just, not just to be redundant, Representative Eastland had stated, I know last year I attended a number of meetings and we had the Early Childhood Caucus with Representative Slavik and Representative Meslow, and I know that I attended a number of them around my district that were held last year, and we finally got this committee going, and I thought we're going to see some really exciting things coming for early childhood, and I thought probably Head Start would be the next step. But when I look at the numbers, and when I hear Representative Peterson's comments, it really dismayed me, because this committee was set up not for adult basic education, which is discussed in K-12 finance. This committee was set up for early childhood. And I think that we've lost perspective here when I look at the total numbers. I was hoping to see the numbers that the governor had there originally, and when I look at the final numbers, I have had just today, I've had five of my ECF directors in my district call me and are very dismayed of what the final members of the House, they're not happy with the numbers that we have. So I don't know how I'm going to tell them what happened to the money, but I can tell them went to child care or what, I don't know, but the numbers weren't there that I thought would be there. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a high Gherkin. As you know, Community Ed is in the Early Childhood Committee and has been for quite a while, including when Representative Sikora was involved with that committee, so I don't think that should be a surprise. But as far as the people back home and how they're feeling about this bill, I asked Representative Slawick, you know, her perspective on the bill, and I actually even have been informed that I have an even better perspective than she does, in the sense that this is the best early childhood bill we have had in some time here. So how you can be now complaining about it when you were in charge, it was cut significantly, and finally this bill makes up for the cuts. I did not hear you advocating and going on about how terrible a bill it was when you had a chance to make up for the cuts like Representative Slawick and her very talented committee have done. So I think you should be grateful if your people back home are still complaining about what they're getting, that the Democrats have gotten in control here, so we at least made up for the cuts that you Republicans made in 2003.
Which leads us right up into the time to consider amendments. Representative Garoppolo. A58. Representative Garoppolo moves to adopt Amendment A58.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now I know why you sat me over here, because now I can't look at the people I'm talking to. So let's get past that up. Madam Chair, members, I will move the A58 amendment and request a roll call on it. Madam Chair, members, you're going to be getting a handout, the blue piece of paper regarding the pertaining to some knowledge of what I'd like to be deleting and adding. And actually, based on the discussion we just had regarding the initially, what this provision would do is it would eliminate the absent day. Hole that would be punched into statute and would use the money and put it into adult basic education. But I'm going to amend my amendment, Madam Chair, in the hopes of picking up some support from the other side of the aisle. I make an oral amendment to delete lines 3, 4, and 5 from my bill. And the intent of that amendment, and perhaps staff can advise me if I'm wrong, but I believe the effects of this amendment would be that the dollars saved by offering this amendment would stay within the child care assistance program. So, Madam Chair, I would move that oral amendment to the 858 amendment and seek advice from staff if that's what the effect of my amendment would be.
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, with the deletion of lines 3, 4, and 5, the effect of this amendment would be to delete Section 12 of the first article, which is the provision regarding absent days, and would leave the funds in citing fee child care as Representative Garofalo intended. Just deleting the subsidiary expenditure of those on absent day.
So the money stays?
The money stays.
Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Again, the blue handout in front of you details the absent day policy that we currently have in statute. And under current law, again, without changes, those who are participating in the Child Care Assistance Program, whether they be the MFIP program or the Basic Sliding Fee program, under existing statute, participants are allowed to miss 35 days, so over 1 month out of a year, for their for the assistance that's being provided. This is reimbursing providers for care that, quite simply, they are not providing. And when I talk with, when we're looking at getting more bang for the buck, I think that it's common sense that given the choice of reimbursing providers for child care they're not providing or reimbursing providers for child care they are providing, this seems like a pretty common sense idea. Again, there's only 260 days in a year, and under current law, we have 25 absent days we allow. We put 10 days on top of that for whatever flexible amount of holidays they are. This seems just pretty common sense. And given the balance we have here, again, I've made an amendment so we're not taking money from one pocket and putting it into another. We're keeping it in the child care program. And I would hope for member support. Thank you.
Representative Pollack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, in addition to all the cuts that happened over the last several years, there were several policies that really hurt Minnesota families. Again, folks, this is the people coming off welfare, getting into the workforce that need this child care. If you look at the language in the bill in terms of what the absent day policy does, it does things like absences due to a documented medical condition of a parent or sibling who lives in the same residence do not count against the 25 absent day limit in a fiscal year. Little kids can't just walk to child care. They have to have an adult that gets them there. So what the policy changes that we are making have been, we've worked with the constituents on, we've worked with the child care community on, and they are helping families because kids are being penalized when actually sometimes it's the adults that can't get them to the care. So I, members, urge a no vote on this amendment.
Representative Slavik. Do I remember coming into a conversation where we were you and some others were talking about the absent days and that this language that's currently starting on page 15 about absent days was a compromise?
Yes, it isn't. I think that there are some people that think it should go further, just like anything, and this is the taking sort of the minimal things we can do to help families and putting them into policy.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Slawick, I hate this. Representative Slawick, I'm trying to talk to you without having my back to it, but the under current law right now, it's my understanding that we actually do have a waiver program when there is a documented medical condition, and we do provide these exceptions. And again, even without the documented exceptions, you can miss, again, 35 days. Am I mistaken in that there is an exception right now for documented, Madam Chair, Representative Slawick, if there are documented illnesses, these are the exceptions already?
Representative Slawick.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, I think I would ask staff just to verify that. Mr. McCormick, do you know?
Mr. McCormick?
Madam Chair, I'm going to have to say that I'm not sure.
Ms. Adrian?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I'm not sure either. We can check and...
As I scan the language, if you look at page 15, and look at lines 24 and 25, you'll note that there's a limit on the number of days that a child care provider may be reimbursed. The limit is 25 days per child. What this bill does, if you continue on the next lines, is it exempts documented medical conditions from that 25-day limit. So if a child had a documented medical condition and was gone for 10 days, that would their score would be zero for sake of this limit. I'm not sure how the department interprets this any further.
Representative Ruth. Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess I'm just a little confused, but I remember this discussion when we changed it to the 25 consecutive days, because unfortunately the system was getting abused. And I actually had counties coming and talking to me and saying, please, I did not serve on Health and Human Services at the time, or do not now, but they said, please get that changed because it's just, it's really hurting. What was happening is that there were children that needed to be in the program that weren't able to be there because people were abusing it, and at that time you could be gone, I think it was 11 days or whatever, you could be gone 5 days, and 11 days or whatever, if you came back for one, anyway. So they went to this with the 25 days, and that, as I understood it then, was 4 sick days. So I don't understand why we need the additional language for sick days, because I don't know what the 25 days are for then. I mean, I guess when, looking back to the business world before my life here, we had 12 sick days, and that was a lot. Most companies didn't have that many, one day a month. So this seems to be very generous with 25 days, so I do question why we would need the additional and what it would be used for, because I would expect that would be for medical situations. Mm-hmm. That would be a question, I guess, Representative Slawik. What would the, why do we need this language? Because I would strongly suggest that those 25 days would be used for medical situations.
Representative Slawik. Madam Chair, and Representative Ruth. Again, you know, for families that are struggling, they're at the bottom of the income chain, they're having trouble probably paying their bills and getting a job and keeping a job, and child care is central to keeping a job. If one of the adults becomes sick and cannot get their child to child care, they get kicked off the system at a certain point, and the slots are filled by someone else, as you said. But nothing that necessarily the child has done, if there's a sick parent in here, as it says, or there's some other language in here that also backs up why this is important. Again, it is important, members, there is a role for government and a role for child care. And we should not be penalizing our families for things like if a parent is sick and the child can't get there. We should be helping the families, and that's what this is designed to do. It's not, I don't think, you know, somebody's going to go, woo, you know, big entitlement that I'm going to get to go, you know, have a couple extra absent days, or I'm going to take a couple days off and my child care provider's going to get paid. I don't think there's people out there that really, at this level, who are struggling, have a lot of time to sit around and think about how they're going to get more absent days.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawik. I mean, there's a role for government, there's a role for child care, but there's also a role for parents. I mean, 25 days is a pretty big allotment of time that you can be absent and still have your child care provider be paid and not holding a slot empty. I think we need to have incentives in law that hold people accountable to what is reasonable for, I think, everyone else. And I think 25 days is more than reasonable. It's more than anybody that I would know that would expect to be able to have a credit for their kids to be gone and still not lose their space. So, I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Garofalo. And I just think what we need to be doing in government is we need to be doing things that are recognizing the need, but also holding people accountable. And I think what we have in law does that. I think it walks that fine balance. I think it's very, very generous. And to expand it even farther, I think, is just really spending needless money that could be used for other things that other parents who want to take the responsibility could benefit from.
Representative Dammer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I won't talk about the 25 days. I think that's a point very well made. But I do have another question, Representative Slawik, on page 16, 16.3 to 16.8. children and families where one parent, at least one of the parents, is under the age of 21, basically saying they can be exempt from the absentee policy altogether. Can you rationalize that?
Representative Slavik. Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, if you read it, it says where one parent is under the age of 21, does not have a high school or GED diploma, and is a student in the school district, right? So these are young, single moms and dads, provides for child care as well as parenting, social services, career and employment supports, academic support, may be exempt from absent limit days upon request of the program and approval of the county. Again, the parent has to request this. They have to talk about why their child may not be there. These are folks that are in school or getting, if they don't have their diplomas. We know, and we talked about this in early childhood talks today, most important thing for a parent, education level. So we need the parents to get educated. If they can't get the child there because either their classes are too early or their classes are late, they can be exempt. And remember, they need approval from the county and request of the program. So it's not like they just miss and say, you know, sorry I missed and I'm not going to be there. It's, you know, I have class, it starts at 7, or I can't, you know, get my child there because of this kind of a conflict. And this kind of, this is, again, about supporting young, vulnerable, teenage parents.
Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Slowick, if these young, vulnerable, teenage parents aren't getting their kids to child care, where are the kids?
Okay.
Well, you know, if they're in school and they can't get the kids to child care, and aren't we also trying to target at-risk young children? And wouldn't this fit the profile that maybe these young children who have children, the children of the young children would actually fit the profile of at risk, and now we're saying that we'll pay for them if they don't take them to child care? Doesn't that go against the grain of what we're trying to do, Representative Slavik?
Representative Slavik.
Madam Chair and Representative Demmer, you know, we can argue all we want. I think we should probably just go ahead and vote. But I think that it doesn't go against the grain we want, and we could probably bring some parents in here, and I bet, Representative Demmer, I know you're a pretty reasonable guy. I bet if you talk to him, you'd probably understand what's happening.
Well, Madam Chair, I just think the kids should be in child care, and if they're not there, where are they?
Thank you. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Slavik.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Abler is excused. Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Heidgerken.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kranz.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Ruth.
Yes.
Representative Rude.
No.
Representative Tilbury.
No.
Representative Ward.
No.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
On a 9-14 vote, the amendment is not adopted. I have an amendment 845. Is there an owner? I have an amendment 848. Is there an owner? I have an amendment 849, Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 849 refers to pages 34, 41, 59, and 61. I'd like to move that amendment.
Representative Wardlow moves adoption of 849.
Madam Chair and members, this amendment reduces the coefficient for the kindergarten entrance assessments on line 17 of the spreadsheet by $407,000 over the biennium and transfers it to one of my favorite places, ECFE on line 9. ECFE, accountability system. I got excited when I saw ECFE. The governor, once again, has requested this language. It's an unfunded mandate to the Department of Education. The assessment program right now, they're having trouble assessing 10% of the children, and they want now they're told to do 30%, and there's no money for them. So that's why I'm moving this amendment. 30% will probably not be reached because they can't reach 10%, but I know the goal is 100%, but it's not realistic. And I will not ask for a roll call. You'd be so kind to hear that, probably.
Thank you. Representative Slavik?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wardlow, you know, we had all these same amendments in our committee, and we defeated them all, and they feel kind of political, and you know, we did the kindergarten entrance assessment. We're trying to get see how kids are ready for school, and there's some criticism that at 10%, are we really getting a representative sample? And our committee felt it was important to increasing the funding to the assessment of kids to make sure we know where kids are really at. When we use that statistic that 50% of the kids are ready for school, do we really know with 10%? And with 30%, it seems like we'd be able to get a more representative sample. I'm with you on liking ECFB, Representative Wardlow, but don't like to see it used as a political football.
Excuse me, Representative.
Which amendment am I doing?
We were doing A49, but you've just described A46.
Well, let's go
so
back to 49.
Should we change your amendment, or should we go back to A49?
Well, I did this in the other committee, too.
Before.
I get focused, and then I...
Which one?
I would like to do 49, because that's the one I'm more passionate about.
Okay. We'll stick with A49
then. I'll move A49. This would increase ECFE funding, which is what I'd like to see happen, by $6.8 million. So line 4 would have an increase of $6.8 million. This would raise the formula from $120 per child to $130 per child. And I was playing with my calculator, even though I didn't have an X or the Y button, I was able to work it. And we just went 2% of the 120 that it was before that went down to 96. It'd go over $130. So if the rate of inflation was, say, 2%, it would go up to over $130 already. Had the old bill passed back in 03, when we went finally up to 104, we would have been at 125. So, you know, we did have a good bill in the House, a little better than what Representative Granny talks about, but... we did have a $4.5 billion deficit, which is not the case now. But anyway, be that as it may. And what this does, it takes $3 million each from the AMFIP and the basic sliding fee child care assistance grants. Those are lines 60 and 70 in your spreadsheet. And it takes $786,000 from line 17, which is the kindergarten entrance assessment, and I explained why I talked about the 10%, 30%. And I know that we all kind of ran that we should increase ECFE funding, and the target of $150 was not reached, so I'm just trying to do that. And I'd like to see ECFE go up to $130 per pupil. And I would like a roll call on this one, Madam Chair.
Representative Slavik.
Madam Chair and Representative Wardlow, now that we're on the right amendment, I talked about the entrance assessment. And just to say, I mean, regarding the 120, I mean, I have ECFE providers that are thrilled with that. And Representative Heidkirk, and I think when you go back and you're having coffee at the cafe, there's got to be a few folks that are liking the 120. I mean, it's pretty darn good to see it back up at that level. So I think this is just... politics, and we should defeat it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Wardlow.
Well, I just had an ECFE person come into my office this morning, and she was disappointed at the 120, and so I said, well, I got an amendment to fix it, but it probably won't pass.
I don't think we want to question motive either.
But this is not political. It's just because I like early childhood.
And you've spoken on that before. Thank you. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Swalwick.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Greiling?
No.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Demmer?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Bunn?
No.
Representative Eastland?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Heidgerken?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Kranz?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Polosky?
No.
Representative Ruth?
Yes.
Representative Rude? Representative Tilbury?
No.
Representative Ward?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
Absolutely.
On 8-14, the amendment is not passed. Amendment 855, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, members, Amendment 855 is—I move that for adoption. And basically, what we're doing here, Madam Chair, is taking $2,500,000 from the Child Care Assistance Grants area, basic citing fees, and putting it toward the Early Childhood Scholarships. Madam Chair, and members, the reason I'm doing that—you know—it was a significant effort by the governor, and I think by those of us in the Early Childhood Caucus, to see more going to what we perceived as again, children at risk. And I think that the Early Childhood Grants, giving power to parents to take those dollars, direct them where they think they're appropriate for their kids, is something that's important. I think the governor had, I think, about $29 million proposed, and I think this current legislation's at, it's way less than that, $2.5 million maybe, something like that. So, Madam Chair, members, I'm just looking to increase that to give parents more control over where the dollars are going for childhood preparation for the kids for school. And I request a roll call, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Representative Murphy and Representative Demmer. This grant, in terms of reducing the basic sliding fee child care assistance, our committee talked long and for many hours about how important this is for our families, and as our role as government of keeping our families working, keeping our children in good quality child care. So I think our committee worked very hard to keep that amount, so I would not recommend cutting it. And then as far as the governor's scholarship program, you know, we do fund $5 million of scholarships in this bill, 2.5 to the governor's scholarship program, 2.5 to rural pilots. So we have those, they're on the table. They're at a smaller level because they're in the pilot stage with MELF. We kind of have them go through, we've actually talked about this, Representative Demmer. We kind of wanted them to go through the process and see how this works. I mean, scholarships are still an experiment. And what if it's an experiment failed? Maybe it's going to be a raging success. But you know what? We don't know yet. And so I would like, potentially someday, this legislature may invest a lot of money in this, but it'd be good first off to see what happens and what the payoff is. So I would recommend a no vote, Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, we have a discussion about this. And I guess it's a very basic principle. This is an education committee. It's not a health and human services committee, so I'd like to see more go toward the education part of it.
Clerk will call the roll on the Demmer motion to adopt Amendment 855.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Peterson. Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo. Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Heidgerken. Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kranz.
No.
Representative Mason.
I'm sorry, no.
Representative Polosky.
No.
Representative Ruth.
Yes.
Representative Rude.
No.
Representative Tilbury.
No.
Representative Ward.
No.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
an 8-14 vote. The amendment is not adopted. Representative Eastland moves adoption of A53.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. In our committee, we offered several amendments to try to accomplish what this amendment is trying to do, which is to get more money into the education component of this bill and to try to keep it under the purview of at-risk kids and preparation for kindergarten. So what this bill does is it takes some money that exists that currently the legislature has not exercised any jurisdiction over. The federal child care development funds come to our state. Those are additional dollars that come to our state from the federal government. And in those dollars, there's a percentage of those dollars that are supposed to be set aside for quality initiatives. And so in speaking with the department to try to figure out what those quality initiatives could entail, I was told that if we could use those for, and I think it's line on the spreadsheet, I think it's line 83, the child care service grants.
On what page?
That would be line 83 on the spreadsheet. On the spreadsheet. The child care service grants would be a use that these quality funds from the federal child care development funds could be used for. And so what this bill does is it simply takes $5 million that are currently in the child care development services grant line, replaces those with these federal child care development funds that are designed for quality, and takes that $5 million and places them into the early childhood school readiness program. So it puts $1 million of them into the hubs. It puts $3 million of them into the governor's scholarship program, and it puts another $2.5 million, I think it is, into the demonstration projects. But so basically, what we're trying to do with this is we're trying to get money that's going to the ECFE programs that I thought we were all trying to move forward in this year, which would work on school readiness and pointing the dollars at risk kids. And we're doing it by actually bringing more money into the bill by just simply exercising some legislative control over money that already exists in the department, using it for purposes that it has already approved to be used for. So that's the amendment.
Thank you. Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to Representative Eastland. We've talked about this amendment before. It's problematic in a couple of areas. I mean, one thing I still find kind of puzzling is not equating early care and child care as being the same thing. Because, you know, if you take a 1-year-old, 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, if they're at child care, if they're at a preschool program, they're still learning, and it still is early care. And so something I've been trying to do myself is to get that, think about it that way, that it's all early care and it's all about helping kids learn, whether they're in a child care setting, a preschool setting with mom, grandma, or wherever they are. Another thing that's kind of problematic is these child care development funds. And in our committee, we were a little bit, you know, puzzled about this one. So we had the department come down and testify, and then we had, so the Department of Ed came down and testified, and then Department of Human Services came down and testified. And basically, I mean, you know, the old saying, there is no free ride. All the money, we hope, here in government is being wisely spent. And this money that's currently in the child care development funds is already being spent on quality child care, and for my understanding, for families that are on the waiting list. So if we were to spend, it'd be double spending the money or taking families that are getting services that would not get those services. I will say, Representative Eastland, though, in the future, our committee, and a heads up to the department, needs to look at what we are doing with these funds and what these funds are for, because I have heard around the country some legislatures have a lot more input into how these funds are spent, and that's something our committee indeed might want to take a future role in. So with that, I would urge a no vote.
Representative Eastland.
Madam Chair, I guess I would just make one more comment that I think we should be thinking about in regard to all of these amendments. When we're dealing with at-risk kids, if they're 4-year-olds and they're in a school readiness program, they aren't going to be in a subsidized daycare program. So it's not like that we're spending for them on one side, and then if we don't have the money there, somehow they aren't going to be served. If we provide service for them in another venue, we can provide a different kind of service that's more appropriate. And that's really what we're after here. Many, many four-year-olds who are at risk could benefit greatly by going to a school readiness program rather than going to a daycare center. And that's what we're trying to do, is create opportunities for at-risk kids to be able to access school readiness in lieu of daycare. I think that's a better option. And so that's what this amendment is trying to do.
All in favor of adoption of the A53 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is not adopted.
Don't be
so negative. Representative Erickson moves the adoption of A54.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the adoption of A54. And amendment takes us to page 35 of the bill, line 6, where I would like to set aside $500,000 for the Commissioner of Education to improve the coordination between either early childhood programs or licensed child care providers who serve four-year-olds, and that coordination should be then with kindergarten teachers. This would be a transition time, and it would bring about conversations and coordination between those programs and kindergarten teachers. So, Madam Chair, I would move that part of the amendment, and then on page 17, insert after provide early childhood programs for. And I'd like a roll call, Madam Chair.
I didn't get that second part on line 17, or
on page. Page 17, line 21.
Yes.
Maybe I misspoke. I apologize.
No, I don't think you misspoke. I think I misheard. Okay. Page 17, line 21. After provide, insert.
She was just reading.
Oh. Madam Chair, it's indicated on my amendment. I was just calling attention to
it. Okay. So you want adoption of the amendment as printed?
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Discussion?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, this is kind of interesting because we're doing a lot of this work right now, so it's hard for me to understand. We have two initiatives that encourage innovation and collaboration on the fragmented system, both the community hubs proposal that Representative Peterson has, and then the School Readiness Advisory Board also addresses that. And then the governor does have some, we are funding some child care services grants, so I think that our committee's worked really hard to put a good bill together, and it's actually similar ideas, but I think ours just puts it together a different way, and we'd appreciate the support of the committee, and would appreciate a vote, no vote.
Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Peterson. No. Representative Mariani?
No.
Representative Riling?
No.
Representative Murphy?
No.
Representative Demmer?
Yes.
Representative Brown?
No.
Representative Bunn?
No.
Representative Eastland?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Heidgerken?
Yes.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Representative Kranz?
No.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative Polosky?
No.
Representative Ruth?
Yes.
Representative Rood?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
No.
Representative Ward?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
Yes.
On a motion, or on a vote of 8-14, the motion is not adopted for A54. Representative Garofalo moves adoption of A44.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, under statute right now, parents are required to be notified that of the availability of developmental screening for their children. What this does is it puts a requirement in there that in addition to being notified about it, they also be notified that if they have conscientiously held religious beliefs, that they, the screening is not required, and that the parent chooses to, in writing, they may opt out of it. That's really a parental education notification, and it shouldn't be that controversial at all. I ask for member support.
Representative Riley, or Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Madam.
Practicing for tomorrow.
Yeah. Representative Slawick. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask Mr. McCormick if he could tell us what current law is on this provision.
Madam Chair, you
Mr.
note
McCormick.
That, Madam Chair, you note that this amendment is drafted to add language to Minnesota Statutes 121A.1775. Currently, for the screening statutes under 121A.17, we have a subdivision 3 requiring school boards to operate a screening program. You'll note under that language it requires a district and the person performing or supervising the screening to provide a parent or guardian with clear written notice. The parent or guardian may decline to answer questions or provide information about family circumstances that might affect development and identification of risk factors that may influence learning. The notice must clearly state that declining to answer questions or provide information does not prevent the child from being enrolled in kindergarten or first grade if all other screening components are met. It goes on to note that if the parent cannot read the comprehensive written notice, that is delivered in other forms. And that currently is in Subdivision 3 of the law. This language goes one step further by requiring in a later subdivision that when information is provided by the board, it must include, and the operative language, as Representative Garofalo has noted, is on the amendment A44 lines 1.14 and 1.15, noting that they must be given a notice that the child is not been screened because of conscientiously held beliefs of the parent or guardian, the screening is not required. So that I would read Representative Grapple's language to be one small step further north for her parent.
Representative Slavik.
Chair Murphy, and thank you, Mr. McCormick. You know, this is some of these debates, for some of you who've been around here a while or you've been on school boards or city councils or everybody comes from their different background, you know that the sort of opt-in, opt-out thing is always around because we're all individuals and we all have our lives and so do our neighbors, and as legislators we want to do the right thing. And I think that legislators prior to us have been very thoughtful about this policy. I don't see any need to change this policy. It's clear that they give written notice. They don't have to they can opt out of parts of the screening, and I see that, you know, it's going to clutter up the statutes, add additional governmental regulations, and I think that's just not something that we want to do. So I would urge a no vote.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Slawick, this is not an opt-in, or, well, with all due respect, it's not an opt-in or opt-out. They can opt out right now. I'm not changing any of that. All I'm saying is that want the parents to know their rights. And second of all, regarding that it's clear, yeah, it's clear to you, it's clear to me, because we're lawmakers. I'm not necessarily sure this is clear to parents.
Right.
So with that, I would ask for member support.
Representative Eastland.
Could I ask a question, maybe, Mr. McCarver? Is every child that enters school required to be screened?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, as I read Subdivision 3 of the current law, a child who is to be screened is given written notice for allowing the parent to opt out of answering questions regarding the screening. So my answer would be that they're not required to be screened, and that children do opt, or parents do opt out of elements of the screening.
Madam Chair.
Representative Eastland.
Okay, and then if we go to the amendment, if we go to lines 1-7 through 1-11, how would that interface with what you just read? Because it seems in there that everyone is required to be screened within 30 days after the first day of attending kindergarten at a public school.
Madam Chair, Representative Eason, a later section of current law does include the exact language about conscientiously held beliefs. Paragraph E of 121.8.17 subdivision 3 goes on to say that if a parent or guardian submits to the administrator or other person having general control and supervision of the school that the child has not been screened because of conscientiously held beliefs of the parent or guardian, the screening is not required. If you read, and it's difficult sometimes, members, to read all of the sections of a complex statute at one time, but if you read and integrate what you're being told under subdivision 3, you're being told that a parent has the right to opt out of answering specific questions in the screening. A parent has the right to opt out of the actual screening because of conscientiously held beliefs. And then if you add in what is being added to subdivision 5, the school board, when it gives notice to parents about screening, would have to affirmatively state in that notice that this right to opt out conscientiously held beliefs exists. So the adding these together means that I as a parent can opt out of some questions, I as a parent can opt out of all questions, and if this amendment is adopted, I will have to be affirmatively told that in my notice about screening.
And
thank you. That answers my question.
Thank you. And Mr. McCormick, how does the school board know that that parent is conscientiously holds these beliefs?
Madam Chairman, a statement has to be signed by the child's parent or guardian and submitted to the administrator or to the other person having the general control or supervision of the school.
Okay. But if they hadn't submitted the statement, it would be, they wouldn't have the responsibility of notification.
Not explicitly in the law.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Slava.
In our committee, this was Representative Gottwald's amendment, and I just think that it seems clear to me that we don't need this, but so I still would urge no vote.
All in favor of the adoption of the 844 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
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 The motion is adopted.
Division?
Representative Slawick asks for a division. All in favor, will you please raise your right hand?
Who has trouble with direction? The recount.
Oh no. All opposed, raise your right hand.
Madam Chair, can you see mine?
I can. One more time. I'm sorry. In favor? Sure, go ahead. Right hands. Opposed?
Madam Chair, my apologies. I try to speed things up.
I know, and I really appreciated that. I really appreciated that. All right. On a vote of 10 to 11, the motion is not adopted. As Representative Freiling said yesterday, though, you're really close. Representative Erickson moves adoption of A56.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do move adoption of A56. Members, this is about school choice. One of my disappointments this session has been that we did not talk enough, at least at the E12 level in policy, about school choice when there is so much today written about providing choice for parents who live in poverty and whose children are then considered poor children. And my other argument for supporting this is that, with all due respect to Representative Peterson, I can't figure out how the hub's going to work. I think it's just a lot of bureaucracy, and moving these dollars into the scholarship program and giving parents choice. I just can't tell you how much I have read about how important it is to give parents who don't have the resources we all have an opportunity to send their children to programs that they wouldn't normally get an opportunity to take advantage of. So I ask for a roll call and for everyone's support, please.
Representative Pollack, Chair Murphy, Representative Erickson, we worked hard on this bill, and we felt that the hubs were an important innovation and wanted to do that. And then the rural pilots do have that choice aspect, whether it's really the allowances or scholarship program. So we've just made different decisions with the money, and members, I would urge a no vote. And also, you know, this debate's going to go on past our committee and our House and into the conference committee. But again, I hope you vote no.
All in favor, signify.
No, I call for roll call, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative Erickson. Pardon, roll call?
I did call for roll call, yes.
Representative Erickson calls for a roll call. All in favor of
the roll.
The clerk will take the roll on adoption of 856.
Four. Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Greiling. Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo. Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Heidgerken.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Kranz.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
President Polosky. President Ruth?
Yes.
President Rood?
No.
President Tilbury?
No.
President Ward?
No.
President Wardlow?
No.
Representative
Granny?
No.
There's a lot of trust you.
On a vote of 6 to 15, the amendment is not adopted. Representative Erickson, A57 is no longer... The author's amendment and the first amendment contradicts this one, or assumes that one won't be offered. A46, Representative Wardlow. We heard Representative Wardlow moves adoption of A46, and he's going to explain it now.
I'm just helping the governor protest
the unfunded mandate to the department, and I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Okay. Thank you. That concludes the amendments that were turned in on proper time. Representative Strawick, do you have any concluding remarks?
Very briefly, Madam Chair, thank you all for your support. The committee did work very hard at this. You know, this is kind of the first step, and obviously it has a long way to go in the process and the conference committee. We're trying to do the best we can for our families and our youngsters and our young citizens, and I think this bill is a significant step towards doing that, so we'd appreciate your support.
We appreciate your hard work. Any further comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want the newcomers to know that you know, what we're doing as minority folks is, you know, it's normal. So, I mean, I don't want you to think that we're unusual, because we enjoyed it when you were in the minority and you did the same thing. So how boring this would be if we couldn't challenge each other. Maybe sometimes we're a little carried away, but, you know, this is part of being in politics. And so when I hear, oh, this is politics, whether it's on my side or your side, I just have to chuckle because, you know, it's just something we have to expect. So I just want to make sure that the newcomers know that it's just normal.
And we tried to tell them. Representative Griley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Representative Erickson, you are on the same note with me right there. I was just saying that earlier to Representative Kranz, that I, too, remember, and I said I'm still smarting from being on the side of having every single amendment lose, but I just remember it so well, and it was very normal, unfortunately.
Well, Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
Excuse me,
Representative Erickson.
It certainly does make me work harder. It's a lot harder to be in the minority than the majority because you have to be thinking up all these amendments
all the time. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, I hate to break the unanimous agreement between Representative Erickson and Griley. Some of us in the majority actually voted for some of those minority amendments. And if there's one thing in all seriousness that concerns me a little bit, is there seems to be a culture that we don't read the bills and the amendments, and we do as others say. And, you know, some of us, in all honesty, in our first terms, much to a great political extent, didn't do that. And I know the comments between Representative Griley and Erickson were meant in jest. I'm not trying to scold, but that's one of the problems with this place. So thank you, Madam Chair.
I accept your advice very, very much, and I think the members also do. And reading the bills and knowing what's coming is a very important part of our job. And that being said, the deadline for tomorrow's bill is 5:00 for any amendments that might be coming before us for the omnibus K-12 bill. And at 5:00 on Thursday is the time that amendments for the higher ed bill for the next day will be heard. And we can't just all assume that there's lockstep because we saw it today. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. And we have two more days together. Representative Heiberkin, did you have a hand?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just a comment to Representative Griley. I know last year that we did have some discussion, and I oftentimes voted back and forth. I know Representative Erickson, Representative Demmer, we've all had some good discussions, and although we did stick together a little bit better than we did last year, I think.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative. Representative Eastland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just along the same lines, I think it's important that we understand what we're doing here, too. It's important that we vet the bills out, that we talk about the issues, we talk about what's good, what's bad, what people like, what people don't like. But we're obviously in a process, and I don't know that any of us have ever worked in a group where we had total unanimity when things went out. But I think what we've got here today is we've got a position that we can bring into conference committee, nothing is going to happen until the governor ultimately signs it. So I think everybody's priorities have been kind of stated today, and I think this is the way the process works, and as we move forward, hopefully we can refine this thing and it can become a better product as we go on.
Great. Very good. Thank you. Representative Zimmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments, and you have a good process. You know, we know about the 5 o'clock deadlines. That's working well. So I appreciate that, and I appreciate your clarity, and quite frankly, I appreciate having the day before and not having a strict 24 hours. I think that's helpful for us and for staff also.
Thank you, Ms. McCormick.
So I appreciate that. Madam Chair. Another comment, too. Regarding the bill, I know Representative Slawick, we spent a lot of time working on early childhood type things. And, you know, the one thing we talked about in our caucus as we were getting prepared to come here, yes, a lot of these were operating committee before. Now, you commented that a number of times. But there are a lot of members here that weren't on your committee. And we do need to go through these things again. There are people here that maybe weren't going to attend your committee, and I think it's very important. And, Madam Chair, not just this, we're going to see this the next 2 days. Because many of these things will come forward that were in committees, and some of us are getting to hear second and even the third time for some of us. I think it's important because there are members that are hearing for the first time. So it's just perspective. The last comment I'd make, Madam Chair, and members, is regarding the substance of the bill. Early childhood is something I think that is important to a lot of us. And we look at what directions we're going to go. We talked about the early childhood caucus. You know, do we want to do the scholarship things? Do we want to do the hub things? We need more money, period. Do we not need more money, period? There, as Representative Easton pointed out, there is less money here than what the governor had proposed, which is interesting. And I think one other thing I noticed is, and I mentioned this in one of my amendments, we seem to have more money going toward the social programs, the social aspects, health human service aspects, as you will, as opposed to the educational aspects, which is the early childhood piece. You know, we're going to child care as opposed to the early childhood learning. I realize there's a blend there. I realize that. But my personal, and I voiced this before, so it's not a secret to or not a surprise to someone who had a conversation with me, I really do like the idea of the scholarship programs. I do like the idea that we empower parents of, especially of children, quote-unquote, at risk, to choose where they want their kids to go and to give them opportunity maybe they don't have. And so I'm a little disappointed that we have gone a little bit more the other way. But that's okay. I respect the work of the committee, Representative Slawick. I know where your heart is, and it's good. And I think the committee's worked hard at it. So I do plan to support the bill, but I just want to make those comments, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you very much. I renew my motion that House File 1056, first in Grossman, be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Finance Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion is adopted. Tomorrow, please plan on a longer day because the bill is, you know, it's K through 12, not just 1 through 5. So it's longer, and I'm sure there's going to be many more amendments. And, or I anticipate, maybe not, but I expect that there will be, and so we will have probably the meeting in 2 time periods. Friday, we have the room scheduled for all afternoon, so be prepared for that. The minutes are in your packet, Representative Peterson.
I would move the minutes.
Representative Peterson moves adoption of the minutes as printed. Are there any additions or corrections? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
That being said, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your cooperation.